My name is Sasha Bookert, and I'm a staff attorney and policy counsel at Transgender Law Center. My job entails, doing a lot of work on our policy initiatives, and that includes working to defeat anti-trans legislation across the country.
Just tell me very generally about the current political and legal climate towards trans people right now.
There's a lot of speculation about what has driven, the increased attacks in state legislatures across the country, targeting trans people. One reason that's often given is that, it's a backlash to marriage equality, and that might be true, and it might be true that, our rising visibility, I think for many years, a lot of the work that we've done as a community, it's been, behind the scenes, and a lot of people just had very confused ideas about who trans people are. So we were just really, to make a long story short, weren't on the radar of a lot of people. But I think in the last few years, that's changed significantly. Last year, we saw over 50 bills introduced targeting, our community. It's not just the bills that restrict access to restrooms and locker rooms. It's bills that would try to keep us from being able to get health care or to be able to update our identity documents, So this is, I want to underscore over and over, this is more than just about the bathroom. This is about erasing trans people completely.
Can you give more detail about that? Like, where are you seeing notable examples of, maybe the really bad stuff?
Some of the bills that we've seen, most of them in the state, on the state level, have targeted youth specifically, and what they would try to do is to deny trans students from being able to use facilities. When they say facilities, I mean restrooms or locker rooms, consistent with their gender identity. And last year, we saw a bill that would have tried to prevent trans youth from being able to access medical care under the state Medicaid plan. This year, we've seen bills in Arizona that would prevent folks who are incarcerated from being able to access transition-related health care. In Indiana, we had a bill that was introduced that would have prevented trans people to update their birth certificates completely. In Virginia, similarly, there was a bill that would have required people to use restrooms consistent with their, original birth certificate. So it was saying that even if you were able to update your birth certificate because you've had surgery, you still wouldn't be able to use a restroom or locker room consistent with your gender identity. So, it's just terrible. So those are the kinds of, bad bills that we've seen. Those are examples. Another example are bills that prevent local jurisdictions from being able to pass protections in favor of LGBT people. By analogy, it would be as if California were to pass a law saying, okay, no longer can cities or counties pass protections on that level. You have to only pass protections based on what we say as on the state level. And because the state level is so conservative, there's no way, that local jurisdictions are ever going to be able to pass protections, for their LGBT folks. One kind of bill that we haven't talked about, and it isn't talked about as much in the trans community, and I'd like to see it talked about more, are what's called First Amendment Defense Acts, FADAs, which are really terrible bills that give businesses a license to discriminate. For example, in Tennessee last year, there was a bill passed that allows therapists to deny a client because they're transgender or gay or lesbian or bisexual. They have to refer them on to somebody else, but it essentially what it does is it prevents the state from taking any action against that therapist.
Now that the guidance has been revoked, what does Title IX do and what does it not do to protect trans people?
Last week, he who shall not be named in the administration rescinded the guidance that had been issued, by the Obama administration. That was guidance that was based on, input from school administrators across the country, but more importantly, it was based on law. It was based on the vast majority of case law that's decided that sex discrimination encompasses gender identity discrimination. This isn't something new. It's not something the Obama administration made up and just imposed on school districts across the country. It was based on existing law. So removing it doesn't change that in any way. So that's, so I just want to clarify that in case people think that there was some kind of shift in the actual law. It was just guidance that was removed, by this administration that unfortunately sends the message that, transgender people, that this president does not have their back. It sends a terrible message. Title IX prohibits, schools that receive federal funding from excluding people from equal participation based on sex or denying them the benefits of education, based on sex. Again, the vast majority of case law for the last 20 years, including Supreme Court case law, has understood sex discrimination to mean more than what the opponents of equality would like it to mean. They would like it to mean chromosomes or some, you know, restrictive variation. Transgender students still absolutely, just like they did before the guidance was rescinded, have every protection they had then that they have now. In other words, they cannot be denied access to a restroom. They can't be treated differently than other students, et cetera. Now, the question of, you know, what the remedies are for those protections, you know, that's a different question.
I've noticed something that the narrative around trans issues has been really focused on trans kids in particular, like specifically high school students. And it kind of occurs to me that, like, trans people obviously don't stop being trans when they grow up. We don't disappear after high school, you know. So I'm just wondering, like, why you think there's this focus, like, in the narrative overall and also that lawmakers are putting on trans kids.
You know, a lot of them are seeking to apply to all trans people, for sure. But I think that they consider this an especially, you know, this especially vulnerable community an easier target to some degree because they have more, probably more ability to control the state's resources than they do to impinge on individual freedoms, if that makes any sense. You know, it's easier to prohibit, you know, schools from doing things than to prohibit businesses or individuals from doing things, you know. So I think that's part of the calculus. And another part is I think it's just, you know, a little bit animus and a little bit, you know, uneasiness with who transgender people are. You know, I think that that's part of it too. It's just really hard to witness as a transgender person and as an adult, you know, to see these attacks on, you know, such, you know, vulnerable youth. We know, you know, when a lot of these bills were introduced last year, that the numbers to the Trans Lifeline crisis line doubled. They spiked, you know, enormously high. And we know the emotional damage that just introducing these bills in places has, you know, much less talking about passing them. You know, on the flip side, too, I just want to keep reiterating, though, how much strength I personally get from trans youth, you know, and it was a big part of my transition was seeing the courage and dignity with which youth hold themselves and speak truth to power and are on the front lines doing this work. It's really powerful to witness and to be a part of.
I feel like a lot of people who don't identify as trans see this as kind of not their fight, but I am wondering, like, how these laws are going to affect cisgender people because, you know, people present in all sorts of different ways, whether they're trans or not.
Yeah, I mean, trans rights are everybody's rights. You know, we've all been picked on for not conforming with what are considered the gender, you know, laws in each school and state. You know, even if you're not transgender, is what I'm trying to say. You've been picked on because you weren't, you know, enough of a man, or you weren't ladylike enough, or whatever. You know, when these kinds of anti-trans laws are introduced, this reinforces and retrenches those really ugly, awful stereotypes. Last year, we haven't seen as much of it this year, but last year, I heard repeatedly of cisgender people, you know, non-transgender people being policed and harassed in bathrooms because non-transgender men felt like they weren't, you know, femininely looking enough to be able to use one of those facilities. So, you know, these protections and you know, the protections that we're, you know, moving forward for transgender people, I would argue, are beneficial for everyone who's been bullied or treated poorly because they didn't fit into some preconceived box or notion of what it means to be, you know, a man or a woman. One thing I would encourage, I don't know a whole lot about this, but I know that, you know, there's folks that are always asking, you know, about like what they can do, you know, and it always helps to, you know, contact your legislator and let them know, you know, that you support legislation that we're talking about today in California, for example. It's, you know, it's just a little bit disheartening for me because I love policy work, you know, and so sometimes when I talk to folks, I'm always like, who's your legislator? You know, and 99% of the time, people have no idea.
I admit I don't know either.
Yeah. So I'm just recommending people just it takes 1.5 minutes just to go on your cell phone and find who's your legislator, California. And, you know, you'll find out instantly and contact them, ask them to support this bill and get to know them and just tell them, hey, I'm your constituent. And these are issues that really matter to me, you know, and get involved.